for the 34th time. For the next hour or so, your ears will be invaded by all things football, from Africa to South Africa to Europe to pretty much anywhere that this beautiful game of ours does touch and cover. We're going to be touching on some of the headline moments that have transpired over the past week in, I guess, the globe, as far as the game is concerned. Of course, on the African continent, it was a big week this past week where we saw the AFCON draw for 2019. All 24 teams know exactly who they'll be facing and who stands between themselves. And the knockout stages come AFCON 2019. Before we get too deep, I'm Lwazi Sekubu.
I'm Xolo Makwaza, in as usual, like Patrick Vieira and Roy Keane.
And well, there's no Yumeka right now, probably still celebrating his victory, or Liverpool's victory over Chelsea. We'll be touching on that a little later as well. But we simply have to start with the big story of the past couple of days on the African continent, the AFCON draw for 2019. And either way, Xola, Bafana Bafana, in part three, they're always going to get a tough draw. And it's pretty much what they got.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough, you know, sort of group for Bafana to come out of Group D. I mean, you've got Morocco in there and Ivory Coast, and, you know, you've got our neighbors in Namibia. I'm sure, you know, the government can sort of, they can sort of sort out that clash and probably promise them something if they let us, you know, through and give us 3 points.
Just give us the 3 points.
Yeah, we're neighbors, man. Well, I'm sure we can sort that out diplomatically. But as far as the other two teams go, Ivory Coast and Morocco, look, you know, Ivory Coast, let's face it, they are, I would say, perennial contenders because they've had, you know, quality players, you know, the Drogbas, the Torres.
A lot of people are saying quite the same team or don't quite have the same players that they maybe did have 5 years ago. Your thoughts on that?
You know, they probably don't, but, you know, Cote d'Ivoire, Ivory Coast is one of those countries where somehow they always have talent, you know, irrespective of whether, you know, like I said, the Torres and the Drogbas, you know, are no longer there. They'll always have somebody there. I mean, they've Wilfred Zaha now, you know, so there's always a big player or a star player that's also internationally known that they always bolster in their team. So that's not going to be an easy one for South Africa because, I mean, Ivory Coast, like I said, they're perennial contenders. So, you know, that's going to be a tricky one. But I don't think we fear anybody at this point. You know, like I said, we took 4 out of 6 points from Nigeria. Yep. We were undefeated in qualifying. So, you know, there's nothing for us to be worried about on that front. But Morocco's the one that I think, you know, is going to be quite a surprise because, you know, they to also have some really good players playing abroad. I mean, led by Ziyech, the guy at Ajax, that you can see in the Champions League and what he's done. So that's not going to be an easy one. I think the Morocco one will be more of a test, you know, for South Africa. Because it's funny, you know, the North African teams play a different brand of football. You know, and the Moroccan team, from what I've seen, even in qualifying, and even when you see their players, they play very similar to a Spanish style. Yeah. Maybe it's because, you know, the distance between Morocco and Spain. But they play a sort of Spanish style, very technical, very short passing game sort of football. And that's the sort of style that, for me, with Bafana, when we play teams like that, you know, we sort of struggle against those teams. But when we play the more physical side, you know, we're able to run around them and, you know, dribble them and you know, just play, you know, we counter the physical style better. Whereas that technical side of the game, it's like, you know, when I remember when we played Nigeria in Uyo, you know, they came with that more physical style and you know, they tried to bully us off the park. But then when we started playing our soccer, we started passing it around and, you know, playing it around them, you know, we actually did quite well. So
You think that that game, particular game, is going to
a tactical battle, more of a question mark. Yeah. But you know,
they've got a fine coach on the African continent in Evrenard as well, who is chasing that record, three different titles with three different teams. So he's got plenty to play for.
Yeah, definitely, he's got plenty to play for. I mean, he has to go against the Ivory Coast as well. So he probably, you know, knows them more than anybody. So I think it's an interesting group for South Africa. Look, it's not the worst group, honestly.
If you were to pick your worst group, which one would you point to?
I tell you what, Egypt's group is not going to be easy.
Yeah, that's
right?
True.
Because DR Congo, believe it or not, they have some serious players, right? If they can rope them in, you know, from, you know, because they play all over the world. So if they can rope in a decent side, I mean, they finished third in the last AFCON, if I'm not mistaken. Third or fourth.
2017.
Yeah, I think they finished third or fourth, right, in the last AFCON. So, you know, they, I mean, if you want to put it in that literal sense, they're the third, fourth best team in Africa, and, you know, from the last AFCON. And Zimbabwe, I think, might surprise Egypt.
This is definitely Zimbabwe's, you know, sort of golden generation that they currently have, and they've got a fantastic team. And my thinking is, game one of the whole tournament, should Zimbabwe upset Egypt,
that will set the tone.
Yeah,
that will definitely set the tone.
A very interesting tournament should that happen.
And I mean, Zimbabwe, you know, they actually have a complete team. I mean, they have good defenders. You know, you've got the likes of Kama Biliot in the midfield, Katsande. Then you've got the likes of Nasha Mushekwe up front.
Knowledge Musana.
So they really have firepower. I think, you know, they could really cause an upset in this group and possibly even top this group. And I mean, they did play, I think they did play DR Congo, one of the qualifiers. They're familiar with them. So... yeah, it's going to be an interesting group, that.
But I
don't think, you know, outside of that group, I mean, I looked at Senegal's group and I'm thinking, you know, Algeria, not the Algeria that they used to be. And Kenya, you know, you never know what you're going to get with Kenya. And I think Tanzania are going to push, but I don't think they have enough quality, you know, collectively. And obviously, we look at our friends in Nigeria. I mean, that group, I mean, give me a break. Nigeria can put their Olympic team there. I mean, they've got Guinea, Madagascar, and Burundi.
And two of them are debutants.
I think Nigeria will easily walk, you know, through that group. And you look at Group E with Tunisia, Mali, Mauritania, and Angola. You fancy Tunisia and Mali in there. With Group F, you've got Cameroon, Ghana, Benin, and Guinea-Bissau. Cameroon, Ghana should come out of there. So... yeah, it's wide open, this AFCON. You know, I said it the last time when Bafana booked their place for Egypt. You know, it's wide open. But, you know, I think with Egypt being the hosts, I think that will go a long way. However, having seen, I know we're going to touch on this later, what Sundowns did in Egypt, you know. If you come in with a bit of grit and you come in with a bit of fight, you know, you could walk away with a result against Egypt, even though it's in Egypt. So I really don't see anybody in this AFCON that I can actually say hands-on favorites. You know, it's their title to lose.
I think you could see from the seedings. I guess you had Pot 1, which had the five World Cup representatives, plus Cameroon, the current holders. And then you had Pot 2, where there was DR Congo, there was Ghana, there was Cote d'Ivoire. And I'm thinking all those teams, in those, especially those first two pots, they probably look at whoever they have to face and be like, well, we've got nothing to fear. We are as giant as any of the other teams.
I don't want to sound too much of a conspiracy theorist, but when I saw the pots, I was like, whoa, you know, like...
And then there was a late change with Nigeria going to...
Do you know what I mean? Like, they avoided all the big teams, and, you know, maybe this is also good for the tournament, because I cannot... I mean, we've heard mumblings for years now about UEFA rigging, you know, the Champions League groups. I mean, I personally feel the border protection thing is a bit of a rigging to me, because you should play whoever, irrespective of what stage it is, whether it's the last 16, whether it's the group stage, you should play whatever. But obviously, they've got TV rights interests and so forth, so I can understand that. But... yeah, it's a wide open AFCON, really wide open. I honestly cannot see anybody as a favorite outside of Egypt simply because they're the host nation.
You are listening to the Pitch Invasion podcast, the podcast for football travelists.
Okay, all right. So a lot to look forward to then, obviously, between now and the start of AFCON with... I guess with players, perhaps a lot of the players who are outside looking in as far as the regular squad for the national team is concerned, they'll be trying to put their hands up between now and the end of the regular football seasons across the world. And if you were to bring it home to South Africa, you've got a team like Mamelodi Sundowns. We've mentioned them. The last time Bafana played, we had about, what, five or six Sundowns players in the squad?
Yeah.
Which you know, is something that is fitting. I guess it's only natural that you have that many. If you look at sort of what's happening in South African football right now, there's a team, and I guess, look, it's a team that's close to your heart, in Orlando Pirates, who are finding the right type of form at the right time in trying to wrestle the title away from Mamelodi Sundowns. And a lot of people maybe up until maybe 3 months ago, had forgotten about a certain Wayne Sandilands, who at 35 has come back into the frame. And I remember maybe about 5 months ago, he was playing MDC football for Orlando Pirates, and a forgotten man very much. He's come back and he's put in some absolutely wonderful performances between the sticks for Orlando Pirates, and really sort of driving them forward towards this league title. A late sort of hand from him. Maybe he's putting his hand up for the reckoning at the very least to go to AFCON 2019.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's so excited about Tiger Woods' comeback. How about Wayne Sandilands' comeback? Can we also get a story like that? Look, you know, it's interesting what Wayne Sandilands has had to do to come back, because, you know, it's criticism of his own fans as well that he's had to deal with, not just, you know, the national picture. And, you know, often criticism from your own fans, is the worst. I mean, you can ask not Bakary Sanya, Arsenal defender now, is escaping me, not Lauren Eboué. There was a point where Emmanuel Eboué was having just a terrible time, and he's spoken about that. That led to, you know, depression while he was at Arsenal, that, you know, the fans were on his case, and eventually one performance sort of sparked, you know, a turnaround, and, you know, he eventually became a fan favorite again. So I think Wayne Sandilands has, you know, hit on that same note where, you know, he's pretty much, I mean, even in the game against, I think it was FC Platinum, where, you know, he made some stellar saves. Yeah. The Pirates really should have lost that game. And you look at, you know, the PSL games that Pirates have played, where Sandilands has made some good saves. Yeah. So he's definitely stuck up his hand to say, guys, don't forget me. And I mean, you look at the context of the goalkeepers in our country. I mean, obviously, Darren Keith, you know, you can't chuck him out now because I mean, he also saved us, you know, to get to AFCON. You know, you look at him, and then you look at Kune, who, you know,
at this late stage of the season, I don't know if he were to come back, maybe let's say in a month from injury, season is over. Between then and the start of AFCON, he would have played no football for the whole year. I don't know. Would you, if you were Stuart Baxter and Kune is available without playing any football for a whole year, is available for AFCON, would you take him?
Brazil did the same thing with Neymar going to the World Cup, and they took him. I think you do the same thing.
You think you do the same?
Kune is, you know, our greatest goalkeeper ever, you know, and why not? You know, if you've got a guy who is pound for pound the best in his position and is pivotal. I mean, you've seen, we talk about De Gea being pivotal to Man United. We've seen Kune being pivotal to Kaiser Chiefs.
Absolutely.
So, you know, how can that guy, you know, lose his place because of an injury? Because I don't think the other goalkeepers have played at Kune's level for a good stretch in time. Because, you know, Darren Keith saves Bafana the one weekend, the following weekend he's subbed against Pirates in a crucial league game. Yeah. So, you know, there seems to be a, you know, lack of consistency. Even with Ronwell Williams, I mean, he's a great goalkeeper, but I always feel that, you know, there's that, he's got a bit of that Jordan Pickford in him, you know, that he will make a blind over save, but then, you know, there's a howler waiting to come. And you look at Wayne Sandilands, you know, in the last 10 games, he's possibly been the most consistent, of the goalkeepers. Yeah. So I think you've got to take him there. I know they took Vuma to where we played Libya, and, you know, that was seen as a bit of a gamble. But, I mean, to compare Vuma and Sandilands, it's not comparable. Yeah. I mean, Sandilands has to be there, if not at least third choice.
Okay, so then you've got four keepers. Only three are going. You've got four keepers.
Kune, Keith, and Sandilands.
So no Williams for you?
No, unfortunately not. Unfortunately not.
Okay. No, it's quite an interesting sort of topic, that, because again, it's one that is going to go on between now and when Bafana do eventually name their squad, and even beyond that, because there will be question marks if Sandilands doesn't make the squad for some reason. The question will be, what more can anyone do to be called up to a squad?
Where's the line of merit? The yardstick to say, you know, this player or goalkeeper can get into the squad versus other players? Because that's where I think things are a bit murky when it comes to national selection, to be honest with you, especially in our country. Because, you know, I look at the goals department, for example, right? And you look at the fact that we, You know, we're not a goal scoring nation, Bafana Bafana. Like we won't roll out and put four or five past people. Yeah, we'll win 2-0, win 2-1, we'll win 1-0, right? But we're not like this is not Benny McCarthy, Sean Bartlett days anymore. Okay. And you look at the current crop of strikers that we have, and we actually are not playing with a renowned, apart from Lebo Motiba, right? Who obviously is scoring in Europe.
But he doesn't even have 10 caps at his name. So he's still relatively new to the system.
So you add him in there. But outside of that, the next best goal scorer is actually a midfielder, right? In Percy Tau. So we actually don't have, you know, out and out strikers that are scoring goals. And again, I'm going to go back to this. I've been saying this for I don't know how many episodes in this podcast. You know, we slept on Chuku, right? We didn't give him citizenship and so forth. There's Gaston Serino and all these other, you know, foreign nationals that are banging in goals. Nationalize these guys. Give them IDs. Give them passports. Put them in the national team.
Yeah.
You can easily find a way to bypass the red tape. We see it all the time with our African players.
Yeah.
I mean, Senegal are robbed of Patrick Vieira. You name it. The Kantes of this world and all the players that Algeria with Zidane. Mm. So many African players are being, you know, like they do here with the mines. You know, they come and they excavate and they take all the diamonds and the minerals back to Europe. They've been doing that for years with the players here. And I think maybe South Africa needs to adopt that and just, you know, one or two guys in key skill positions, especially up front. Mm. Give the goddamn passport and, you know, let's look at ways of getting him you know, into the national setup. Because I mean, I look at Serena, for example. You know, that guy is a player. You know, so I think it's about time that we start thinking of the bigger picture here, especially now with, you know, the World Cup qualifying coming in line. I don't know how many years you need, you know, I think it's 5 years you need for permanent residency, but I know if you buy a house, you get permanent residency, right? I'm pretty sure Serena's bought a house by now. Safa, do the right thing. Give this guy Bafana colors, and you'd gladly take it. Look at Jeremy Brockie, for example, right? I'm pretty sure Jeremy Brockie any day would take Bafana over New Zealand, right? Any day of the week. So there's so many of these guys that we're letting go. And I'm stretching it beyond, you know, now World Cup qualifying and so forth. Guys like Serino, Nascimento, right? There's no way that these guys are out here at the level that they're playing, even in CAF, right? And they're really putting in performances. Why can't we get these guys into the national setup? Why not? Every other country in the world does it. Look at Portugal. Remember Deco? Couldn't crack it for Brazil, goes to Portugal. Becomes a legend. Yeah. So it happens. We need to just follow suit and do the same with a lot of our, you know, foreign national players.
Okay, all right. So Ola is looking beyond AFCON and thinking about the World Cup qualifiers, which, let's be honest, is something that we definitely need to think about as South Africa, because you know what? It matters very little. You qualify for AFCON, you go there, let's say you do well and you get to the quarterfinals, maybe even a semi-final spot, and then you fail to make it to the World Cup. It just means you haven't really moved forward, is it? So hopefully Bafana Bafana, even through this period of focusing on AFCON, will be sort of thinking about that World Cup qualification as well. As we welcome Imika, top of the table, clear of Manchester City.
Yeah, but Man City have a game in hand. Let's not forget
Man City with a game in hand, but listen, it doesn't change the picture. Hey, it doesn't change the picture, Imika.
Yeah, thanks a lot, and great to join you guys. I think that game in hand is important, but I think points in hand mean a lot more. So we'll see what happens at the end of the week when Man City has played Tottenham and Man United. If they get 6 points from those games, then they deserve to be champions.
Before we move on, I mean, we're going to come back to the Premier League picture, but I want to find out from you, what did you think of the performance, Liverpool against Chelsea?
I must say that it was a good game, you know, on both sides, because, you know, Chelsea played really well. So they made first half very, very difficult, but I think Liverpool came back in the second half with a plan. And once they got that goal, you know, they needed a little bit of genius from Mo Salah. Mm. And what was really weird was that immediately after that, Chelsea had two very good chances to bring that game back
and
level.
They should have.
Mm. So it's the kind of scenario where, you know, where a team is looking like destined to be champions, and you know certain things go their way. But I mean, that was. I mean, Liverpool deserved their win, but mm-hmm. you know, if it went either way, it would still have been a fair result.
Okay, all right, that's a very good point. Before we move on from that, because we have to talk about Orlando Pirates and the way that they're doing in the Absa Premiership. you mentioned that goal by Salah, and I'm sure you saw the reactions afterwards of what Shay Given was doing when the goal was scored. And while everyone else was celebrating, Shay Given was tucking into his food in studio. And I'm seeing Ola here while you're talking, he's tucking into his food as well. yes, Orlando Pirates, top of the table, again, also clear of their nearest challengers, who happen to have three games in hand, not just one. But at this stage of the season, you have to say, Yemeka, that it is advantage Orlando Pirates either way, even with Sundowns, with those three games in hand.
I've always said that you know, the Pirates are very well poised, mm. and that they just needed to pull their socks and try and win the game against Leopards and Free States.
Yeah.
And you know.
Okay. While we wait for Yemeka to connect back with us, with us, Ola, he was making a point that Pirates have been well poised pretty much ever since they dropped out of the CAF Champions League, and I think we are seeing that in the way that they're performing. Three wins in as many games in a space of a week has really put them very much in the pound seat.
I think, you know, ever since the exit in the CAF Confed Cup, you know, they're now able to focus on one thing, you know, because remember, Pirates, unlike Sundowns, don't have that depth and quality. Mm. So they have to literally put all their eggs in one basket in one competition. And that means playing the strongest lineup without having to worry about, oh, resting players and so forth. So that's the advantage that they have. And I mean, credit to Mitchell, because the guys are grinding out results. Look, I know against Vitz it was an own goal, but you know, you create your own luck. If that ball doesn't come in the box perfectly, if it comes in at knee height, for example, that goal doesn't come in.
Yeah.
So you create your own luck. So I think they're at the stage now, even against Free State Stars, although, you know, they were comfortable at 2-0 and they hung on eventually, but you know, they're grinding out results. This is a stage of the season where, you know, no one's going to hand it to you.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to have to go out and take it. And you can see it now with the belief that the team have that, you know, I think you can sense that they believe that they cannot lose. Mm. Okay. It might go down to a draw, but you can see it in their performances. They cannot lose. I think in the last 10 games that I've seen with the Pirates, they have been behind a couple of times and they've gone on to, you know, overcome and win, and they've gone on to draw, which shows the resilience. And like I said, with the goal against Vitz, is that, you know, you cannot say that they didn't deserve that luck, you know, for them to go in, because they kept going.
Yeah, no, they did. And, you know, you mentioned that resilience, and it's something that Innocent Maela was actually talking about on social media a couple of days ago, mentioning that even in the change room now, they're starting to feel, you know, they're starting to get that that belief that, you know what, we actually have it in our hands. And if you look at their fixtures, they lost three remaining games. Yes, as difficult a fixture list as you can get in finishing off a season, especially when you're challenging for the title. But, you know, it's games that, especially the last two, where you've got Cape Town City and Bologwana City, you know, in many ways can't go either way. That Maritzburg United game later on this week is going to be extremely important for them. And I say important because they're up against a team that is fast running out of time to survive. They're going to Herigwala Stadium, where Maritzburg United are better than they are away from home. So that's the game for me that is going to, you know, be extremely important, because now the result there affects how they play against Cape Town City away from home as well.
Yeah, I think that game, you know, is possibly going to be, you know, their toughest of the three. Mm. Because I think Maritzburg, you know, if they are going to go down, they want the last hurrah. And that Absolutely. Would be, you know, a Orlando Pirates' scalp.
Yeah.
You know, because I think the Cape Town City Polokwane games, I think those will just be showdowns for who might sneak into, you know, that fourth place for the CAF Confed. So that's an expected showdown. Yeah. But I think the Maritzburg one could be a trap game because Maritzburg, you know, they're party spoilers. And they're at that point in the season where I think mathematically you can say that, you know, Maritzburg are going to go down. You know, I think they really need like miracles from other teams, never mind themselves, you know, for them to avoid relegation. And, you know, what better way if you are going to go down than to say, okay, look, we went down, but, you know, we stopped Orlando Pirates' charge for the title, or we put a dent at least.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Maritzburg are going to go for.
Especially with one Eric Tinkler.
Exactly.
sitting.
You know, and as far as the Polokwane game, you know, the final game of the season at home, if Pirates do overcome, I think, sorry, that's three games, that's 9 points. Yeah. If Pirates can go into that game having won 4 points from Maritzburg and Cape Town City, or at absolute minimum three out of six, and they go into that last game against Polokwane City where they at home it's for the league,
and
I'm telling you now, you know, fill up Orlando Stadium is going to be revived.
I was about to say,
and
that.
Everybody is going to be there,
I
and
can literally,
you're going to get the same scenes that you saw with Sundowns and Al Ahly, except the stadium will just be black. Yeah. No, not black people, but the color of the shirts will just be black.
I was literally about to say that.
Well, yeah, black people too.
I can put my sneaker collection on the line in saying that game, I would be very disappointed if there's
Paint
one
Orlando
seat.
Orlando black.
If there's one seat that is available.
Yeah.
I'll be very disappointed. And look, I'm a Chiefs fan, so but I can
and what a good storyline.
Yeah, I can appreciate
for
exactly
the PSL.
What they're doing.
I mean, I can't think of the last time Orlando Stadium had significance in terms of the national sort of attention.
Absolutely.
Yes, they've had big games. They've had, you know, semi-final. I think there was a Chiefs, if I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong. I think there was a Chiefs Pirates MTN8 at Orlando State. I could be wrong, right? But I think there was one there. And I was there at that game. I think that was where Opa Manisa beat Gudner from some ridiculous...
No, that was definitely FNB Stadium.
Well, was that FNB Stadium?
2011,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
But I think there was a Chiefs Pirates game that I was there at Orlando State. I'm pretty sure of that. But the point is, what a great sort of... you know, a venue, a historic venue in South African football to have another moment in its pages of history where a title can be won. Because remember, Pirates, you know, as far as Orlando Stadium goes, you know, they've had success there. Mm. You know, they did win a title there before and they've won cups there. So this would just add to another page in Orlando Stadium and Orlando Pirates. It's just fitting. It's almost like, I mean, you look at Arsenal, for example, where they're saying that Arsenal haven't won a trophy at the Emirates. I mean, the FA Cups were won at Wembley.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
They're yet to win the league and celebrate it at the Emirates. And I think you look at what Orlando Stadium means to Orlando Pirates, to Soweto football, to have another trophy, the league, won there on the final day. That just, to me, is a beautiful picture.
Pitch Invasion is the podcast for football tribalists. To contribute to the show, pose a topic of debate, or just complain about your favorite team, send us a WhatsApp voice note on +27 609 216977. That's +27 609 216977. Or send us a text message starting with hashtag Pitch Invasion. Remember to follow the Pitch Invasion podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram under the username Pitch Invaded.
Speaking of a picture, now here's a scenario though. We've got Mamelodi Sundowns with three games in hand. We still don't know what's going to happen with the whole appeal thing. Pirates are going to be playing these games. They've got nothing else to play for. Sundowns have three games in about 9 days, I think, that they're going to have to play in catching up.
You know, so, I think there was something that I looked at, I think it was this past weekend, where I was saying to myself, why didn't Sundowns play the midweek game? Because...
As in this midweek
game
we're going into?
Because they had Al Ahly on Saturday.
Yeah.
And they last played that week with Al Ahly on Saturday.
Yeah.
And I think they could have at least put in a game on Wednesday or, you know, at earliest on Tuesday. Because when you've thrashed a team 5-0, right, at that relative ease. I think the boys, you know, can come in again 2 days later and
do
play
the job, yeah,
right, because they didn't really have to sweat that hard. And I think they should have played in that midweek. And now you're looking at a fixture crunch now, because, you know, it's getting to that stage where it's serious now. It's the semifinals.
Yeah.
So Bissau cannot afford to rest any players.
Absolutely.
You've got the semifinals
not.
And the league to play for. But I think if they had played a midweek game, it would have just sort of, you know, taken a load off them a little bit.
Mm.
And it would have been two games as opposed to three.
Yeah.
Because now, obviously, they're still, you know, waiting that outcome with the Arensa situation. So I think that fixture crunch is going to work against Sundowns now. Yeah.
Because they
could possibly be playing for 2 weeks straight. They could be possibly playing two games in a week.
Yeah. So that's just a case that they find themselves in. But here's a comment that has been doing the rounds. As far as Mamelodi Sundowns are concerned, if they had to at this stage of the season, then decide, listen, we can't go for both. We've got the squad, yes, we can do it, but for the sake of, I guess, just directing our challenge into one sort of direction, we can't go for both. Do you feel that the league would be the one that they sacrifice?
You know what? I think at this stage of the season, you have to kind of go for both, to be honest with you. I don't think you can sacrifice one or the other, because, you know, the CAF Champions League, you're three games away.
Yeah.
Right? Three games away from, you know, South African football immortality.
Mm.
Okay? Being the only team in South Africa with two stars.
Yeah.
And then you go back and you look at the Premier League, you know, you're also three games away. Well, those are the three games in hand, but I think they're five games away, right? Six games away.
So they still got plenty
still got
to play for.
Games away. So you're six games away from also etching yourself as possibly the best, you know, team in the land in terms of league titles. So when you have history on either side, you know, I don't see how you can say, okay, look, I'm going to focus on this and not focus on that. It reminds me of when I go to dinner, right? If I know there's a good dessert in there, right? But I know at the same time, man, the buffet is also quite good. I'm not going to save myself for the dessert. I'm going to enjoy the buffet. And if I have to stuff down the dessert, I'm going to stuff it down. But it is going to go down. That's where Sundowns find themselves. I don't think they can actually say, you know what, we might save ourselves for the league, because the Champions League is more important. Why not get the cup double? The league and the Champions League double? Why
not get
it? Mika's not impressed with your analogy. He's just not impressed at all. Mika, but where do you stand in the whole picture, though? Mamelodi Sundowns, if you're Mamelodi Sundowns management right now, again, Ola mentions you've got history on both sides of the coin. Do you go for both?
Well, look, I have, you know, first of all, to the dessert and buffet issue, it's like going to, there's that restaurant called Carnival where you just eat as much until you're tired.
Yes, yes, yes. I love Carnival.
Yes. So that's not an option. Sundowns has got to make a call, and they probably can't win both. But if they really want to win the CAF Champions League, it's going to be very difficult because of the number of weeks that are left, and you know what they need, how they need to concentrate to because to do well in Africa. Now you're up against the really, really formidable teams. Mm. Yes, they did well to get rid of Al Ahly, but everybody else that is left there, including you know some of those real powerhouse teams. There's no easy games on either end of the. They've got to try and take what they can. They've got a big squad.
Yeah.
It's how they're able to balance out what they need. Because the biggest problem when you're playing twice a week is you play weekend and midweek, and that's how it's going to be for them over the next couple of weeks.
Mm.
So it's going to be very difficult for them to get the full recovery before any other game. And that's
the tricky
side of it.
Raise a point. Right. You then wonder if the PSL has possibly done Sundowns and Bafana Bafana a disservice here, right, in terms of the fixtures. Because I alluded to the fact that Sundowns should have played a midweek game this past week.
Yeah.
Right? And I now look at the fact that we had 5 Sundowns players in that game against Libya.
Mm.
Right? And Sundowns, you know, still have league games to play, 6 of them.
Mm.
Right? Possibly 3 more games of the AFCON. Of CAF Champions League. And then straight after that is AFCON.
Yes,
so you wonder if, you know, those players will not be tired getting to AFCON. Because, I mean, there's no way some of those players should not be on the starting lineup for Sundowns.
There's a month between the Nedbank Cup final and AFCON, and to best of my knowledge, Sundowns are not playing the Nedbank Cup final, so they will definitely be done with the league, and it will just be the CAF Champions League. I think that they will manage. I think also the players know that the playing for Bafana at AFCON won't be a problem. The thing is just that they may not have enough time before the next season starts, which is what
I think maybe that's what Ola is alluding to as well. Because if you're looking at Sundowns, for the last 3-4 years, they've been playing non-stop football.
Yeah, you see, the thing, I get it, Amika, there's a month, you know, in that break, or I think it's 3.5 weeks, somewhere there, right? But in that break, Stuart Baxter's going to be, you know, putting the guys to their straps. He's not going to be, okay, let's relax, Sundowns players, touch in the circle. Do you know what I mean? He's going to actually making these guys work for their positions. So I wonder. And, you know, you look at it in the Sundowns context, you know, do the guys rock up to camp, you know, not sort of like match sharp in terms of just the speed of the play? They have to, you know, build relationships with other players, because it doesn't mean that Stuart Baxter is going to be playing the same team that he played in the qualifying.
Yeah.
So, you know, will Stuart Baxter have time to try out the combinations? Will, you know, he have time to see where he can make some of those Sundowns plays? Because, look, they will need a rest. They definitely will need a rest.
And you know, it's a point that Gavin Hunt actually alluded to in that win against Chippa United last Friday. He was like, well, you know what? I finally have all my Bafana defenders back. Because either through maybe a niggle here, or maybe he just felt he had to rest some of them. You know, he couldn't immediately get them back and straight into the system, even in this crucial stage of the season where they're trying to
challenge for the title. And AFCON is longer this year. So, you know, who knows if Bafana do go on a good run. So I think it is an interesting thing that maybe in hindsight, you know, people didn't foresee that this could happen in terms of the fixture pileup of the team that is gunning for the league, Champions League, and has a good number of Bafana players, you know, within their setup. So I just wonder if, you know, that, you know, could possibly cause a problem as far as Bafana goes in terms of trying to set up your team.
We can't complain, Kola, because we can't complain because we didn't even know if Bafana was going to qualify. Now they've qualified.
Wow.
Now we're complaining about players.
Wow, Emeka, really?
I think we need... Yes, a few weeks ago, you guys were saying how Bafana couldn't afford it to go and draw the game to get to the tournament. Now they're there, you're complaining about players playing. The Sundowns players, they are playing in Africa, is good for Bafana because it gives them more and more experience and more confidence. So let's see what happens at the end of the season. Maybe Sundowns get knocked out early. You don't know. But, you know, we're just speculating and assuming that they're going to get to the finals. You don't know if they're going to get there or not.
Well, I mean,
you can't beat Al Ahly 5-0 and not be a contender to get to the final, Mika.
Well, sometimes you might just call your goals in that one game.
Well, what we do know, Emeka, is that it is wide at Casablanca that lie ahead from Mamelodi Sundowns in the semi-finals.
And they've dealt with them before.
They've beaten them before. On the other side of that draw is Esperance, the defending champions, and TP Mazembe, teams that Sundowns have played against as well over the last 3 or 4 years. So, again, there's no reason to not assume that Sundowns could make it through to the final. If they play the way that they have been playing in the knockouts, they certainly have a very good chance of getting there.
I haven't said so. I really would love to see Sundowns win another title, because if they do, then it will help shake up this mentality in South Africa about not wanting to take African competitions seriously. And I hope the Kaizer Chiefs actually do wake up to the reality that
to be a big
player, you know, you've got to be competing against the best in Africa. So we've seen Paris
and not fighting for a top 8 finish.
We've seen also Supersport United play in the final. So yeah. We want to see Bidvest and Supersport take it a lot more seriously. Mm. So, and Kaizer Chiefs take it a bit more seriously. We need to see those two.
Absolutely, absolutely. But either way, for Mamelodi Sundowns, the month of April, well, what remains of it is just going to be so pivotal, because after those three games that they play in about 9 days and the first leg of the semi-finals, which they'll be playing away from home, it's going to be, by the time they go into May, they know exactly what the picture looks like, if that history that we've touched on is said to be theirs. But speaking of history, that long wait for Liverpool to be crowned or to be known as champions of England, that long generational wait, that long, long wait.
I'm sure, Mika, your kids are like, Daddy, why do you support Liverpool? Like, they probably don't understand where your fascination of Liverpool comes from. Because since they've been born, they've seen slips, they've seen chokes, they've seen literally nothing from Liverpool.
What is a Liverpool, Daddy? Emika, are you there? Emika's running away. That's what Emika's doing. But look, Ola, they are there. They are there. And after that victory over Chelsea, and the manner in which they got it, it was typical Liverpool. It was never going to be a game of small margins. They were either going to, you know, blow hot for a couple of minutes or cold for a couple of minutes as well. And they were cold for a while, and Chelsea should have punished. But when they were on top, Liverpool, they looked the part again.
Just a friendly reminder. Man City have a game in hand.
Yeah, we know.
Okay,
yeah.
Man City have a game in hand. So, you know, I saw Klopp fist pumping, you know.
Yeah, at the end there, he was absolutely going for it.
I just couldn't help think that Klopp, City have a game in hand. You blew a 10-point lead at Christmas, right? Just relax for a second, okay? And I think Liverpool fans, look, they've got every right to be optimistic, because, I mean, you know, they're in this position because of the results that they've put in. And I guess the result against Chelsea, you know, makes them believe even more. Mm. But I think right now, you know, it's really not even in their hands anymore. Mm. It's down to Man City's hands. Because Man City, you know, they still have to go to Old Trafford and they still have to play Spurs. Mm. So I think if you're a Liverpool fan right now, you know, you're just happy with your team's performance, but you are praying that Man City slip up, because that's the only way I see Liverpool can win the title, given the fact that, you know, they are ahead by a point and City have a game in hand.
And the truth of the matter is, everyone is going on about how big the Spurs and United games are for City. These are teams that they can beat on any given day.
Yeah.
And listen, I'm talking as a United fan, a diehard United fan, but City can, if they want, in that game, beat United 3-0, and it's not going to be a thing.
And I saw something the other day where, you know, they were quizzing Man United fans.
Yeah.
And they said, should we let City win so that Liverpool don't win the title?
Yeah.
And that's actually been like a talk amongst fans, because obviously you've got your City rivals going for the title, and you've got your bitter rivals in Liverpool going for the title. So what would you rather see more? City win the title or Liverpool? So they were actually saying, you know, should we just give up the game?
Gary Neville,
City?
If I'm not mistaken, can make that comment as well, that United should actually rest players, should rest their regulars against City in that game. Sitting next to Jamie Carragher, and Carragher lost his mind. He couldn't believe what he was saying, because, again, look, I'm in no way associated with the city of Manchester. I've never been there. I don't know, you know, the red from blue, which side is, you know what I mean. But as a United fan, I would easily let City win the league instead of Liverpool. Ooh. Any day, Emika.
How's that sitting well with
Emika? Any day.
How is that going to sit well with
Emika? I do not want Liverpool to win the league. You know what? I'm just going to be, I'm going to move out of my impartial seat for a while.
Even if Man City do beat United, they still have to beat Leicester, and they still have to beat
But
Tottenham.
These are teams that they can beat on any day if they want.
Yes, they can, but Tottenham did beat them in the Champions League.
Okay, Emika. This is the typical Liverpool fan. That's what he's holding on to. That one of these two teams you know, this is where Manchester City will slip up. And let's be honest, even if they do slip up against one of these two teams, but they win their game in hand, they'll still be, what, a point or 2 points ahead of you with the two teams having played the same number of games? Mm. So they'll still be ahead should they slip up against either United or Tottenham, Emeka.
But that is interesting, though, you know, and I'm saying this as a neutral, obviously as an Arsenal fan, is that when you look at it this way, right, I think... Should Liverpool win the league and Manchester City win the Champions League, I think that's going to blow Manchester United out of the English conversation for a very, very long time. Because if you're a Man United fan, honestly, you're caught between a rock and a hard place. Because, you know, you're looking at Liverpool, who you overtook. Mm. And, you know, 3 years ago. 5 years ago, right? It looked like Liverpool would never, ever, ever get back to Manchester United's level, ever. Yeah. And now you could have a situation where Manchester United look like they're probably 5 years away from getting to Liverpool's level. Mm. So Manchester City have obviously come in as the noisy neighbors. They're rewriting their own history, their modern day history. And part of that modern day history is winning league titles when Man United is not. So it's actually interesting if you're a Man United fan that, you know, who do you actually want to see win the league? Because either way, if Manchester City win the league, right, those are your rivals, and they're taking, what, they would have taken two league titles since you won your last one. And you're looking at Liverpool, who, you know, obviously as bitter rivals, you don't want them to win.
I do not want them to get to 19. 18 is the last that they should ever see. I do not want you guys to win the league, Emeka. That's just me. That's just me.
Well, sorry for you. you know, there's this saying, qui sera, sera. Whatever will be.
Yeah.
So let's you know, for me, I want to take it one game at a time. But I know that, you know, like I said earlier, if Man City do win those two games, then, you know, they deserve to be champions.
Okay. All right. But I mean, if we are to talk about your team a bit more, Emeka, this win over Chelsea, I mean, it took a lot out of the team, and you could see maybe from the celebrations at the end. But, you know, does it reaffirm you as a Liverpool fan that you guys do have the mentality to go on? You've got that drive to go on and actually be crowned champions? Because I can imagine that between now and the end of the season, there'll be one or two other games where you're going to need to dig deep.
I mean, Liverpool has only lost one game this season. That will tell you how formidable
that's
they've been this season.
Record,
and they've also... Yes, and they've also... you know, they have a plus 57 goal difference, which is you know, unbelievable. You know, because usually they concede a lot of goals. Mm. You know, they have the least, they consider the least number of goals, and I think maybe they've considered a bit more in the last few games, maybe from pressure. But you know, they did well earlier in the season to not concede a lot of goals.
Yeah.
And you know, we've seen situations where, you know, some players have come in and stepped up their game. I mean, the coach was bold enough to play without Matip and brought back Lovren in the Champions League, and he did pretty well.
Naby Keita scoring goals now.
and suddenly Naby Keita seems to be, we're seeing, you know, moments of his brilliance coming back, you know to the team. So it's the difference between the Liverpool team of 2014 that not only won, lost the league, and then the team also that lost the Champions last year, is that they have a lot more depth. Mm. You know, there's a lot more depth in, you know, even if one of those front three gets out, he's shown that, you know, he can bring in Origi, bring in Shaqiri, bring in a few guys, tweak it a bit, and they still somehow manage to get some kind of results. So what they've achieved in the last few games that they've won, where they've come from behind, that's typical Liverpool. They would have lost those games, but we've seen a certain kind of resurgence in their overall, in overall play, and confidence that we've seen. And then all this talk about, you know, trying to depend on Salah. Salah's continued to produce some moment of magic. Maybe not the heights of last season, but you see the influence from the Tottenham game also the last two games, he suddenly, you know, become like a different player altogether.
I mean, he's going to care. He's going to care very little about these comparisons between last season and this season if Liverpool go on to win the title, because, you know, he would have actually won the title.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, because beyond even his goal scoring, you know, Mane has stepped up with a bit more goals when you know, no one was expecting.
That's my Liverpool player of the season.
At Salah. I think so as well. And then also, Kola is always on about Firmino. Firmino's numbers this season is also pretty good.
Roberto Firmino. Well, before we close, I have to ask you this, Emeka. Your run-in, you've got Cardiff, you've got Huddersfield, you've got Newcastle United, and then Wolves at home in finishing off the season. All games, all four of them, very much winnable. Do you think it is possible, and Ola, I want to get your opinion on this as well. Do you think it's possible that you guys actually win all four of these games?
I think it's possible. The good thing is that it's not just the fans who want them to win. I think the players do want to win.
Yeah.
And you can see that in the way they've responded to the games. In fact, sometimes when you think about it, you see that the players have come to a point where there's this realization that, look, we could be champions if we try and win our games. Yeah. Even though they know that Man City seems like sometimes almost incapable of dropping points, but they have to first try and win their games, and then, you know, look at where that leaves them. Because Man City's biggest challenge is that they set up to try and win the Champions League. If they do crash out, then it means that they will have to focus on the Premier League, and that won't be a good thing for Liverpool. But if they win, then there's the extra incentive of having to play semi-finals, which puts added pressure on them. In terms of Champions League, Liverpool do have the edge because they know how to play in the Champions League, especially the two-leg ties, and still play their league games. So it's for us as fans, I think it's very interesting. Maybe next three to four weeks will be probably the most interesting we've seen in a very long time, because don't forget that there's still Barcelona in the Champions League.
Okay, Paula.
Hey, whoa, can you get past Porto first? Hey. You know, hold on there. Look, I think of those four games, I mean, Cardiff, Huddersfield, Huddersfield, by the time you play Cardiff, they could be relegated. So you could have back-to-back relegated teams.
Yeah.
The Newcastle one is interesting because you've got Rafa there. And I think Rafa, if there's any team right now, apart from Man United, that Rafa would actually want to just stick it to them, I think it's probably Liverpool. And I wouldn't be surprised if Rafa tends to have a game plan.
Listen, Rafa and Brendan Rodgers, they are two Liverpool managers that came closest to winning the league. They would definitely want Liverpool to win.
So there's no way they're just going to make it easy for Rafa Benitez. I mean, for Jurgen Klopp.
Yeah.
There's no way. The Wolves game, I think, will also be quite tricky because, I mean, Wolves have a phenomenal record against the top six teams. So that could be a tricky one. But I think Liverpool's destiny with the title really lies in Manchester City's run with that Tottenham and Manchester United game. I think those two games will decide the title for me. You know, even though Liverpool aren't playing those games, it's more Man City. Because, you know, obviously with that game in hand, and, you know, if they slip up in those two games or one of those two games, I think Liverpool, you know, the momentum and the drive is just so big. It seems like the whole world wants Liverpool to win the title, and I think they're feeding off that. So, you know, they could possibly, you know, push through.
The most entertaining team in the world right now, so who wouldn't want them to win the title?
I second that very quickly. But Emeka, in closing, a quick 30 seconds from you on just your reaction and your thoughts on Nigeria's draw at the AFCON 2019.
I think they got a good draw. The problem with Nigeria and those kind of draws is that sometimes they get complacent. Nigeria at the AFCON, they do better when they have a tough group to navigate. And, you know, I think if my memory serves me well, I think they've only ever failed to come out of the group stage. That was 1982. And I think mostly that so it'll be, I believe they should be through the And I think they might also be one of the really top contenders, because if they keep the momentum from the World Cup and they've done so well in recent games, maybe they come out of their group, they maybe might be able to mount a serious challenge, because they've got quality, and if Ighalo is still scoring, then the coach doesn't allow Chukwueze to go playing around with junior teams rather than with the Super Eagles, then they do stand a chance, because there's enough quality in that team.
Okay, all right. Let's not forget that they are only coming back for the first time in three editions. So good luck to the Super Eagles. And
it's the same thing. In 2013, they came back. They missed out in 2012, and they came back and won it in South Africa. So don't be surprised.
South Africa is home for them anyway, so it's okay. It wasn't.
Yes.
It wasn't.
Thanks for admitting.
Ibuka, thank you very much for joining us. Hope you have a good week further. We'll speak to you next week, Mr. Magwaza. Thank you for your time as well, and eating right in front of
thank
me.
Thank you. And enjoy the drama.
All right, Ibuka. Hola.
Yep, in closing, I just want to say that Arsenal guys are doing a serious, serious, serious job at getting back into that top four. And I'm telling you now, we're going to finish third. Mark my words.
I think you just want to say Watford are doing you guys a serious, serious favor in doing exactly that. But as for United fans, we've got some difficult couple of hours to come, but we'll touch on that and a bit more next time on Pitch Invasion. From myself, Lwazi Siqubu.
Hola Makwaza.
And Ibuka, all the way wherever he is, it's goodbye.